IC and a picture, six element quad, typical quad. So, and it's on the wooden stick from Home Depot, inch by inch, let's say. And all of the elements holding this quad, the quartz of the quad, are made from the plastic printed by the designer, and then you just use a piece of wire around it. You have a quite really good antenna that you can experiment with. I see the benefit with respect to you.
Okay. I don't particularly. I think that the guy who did the video did a really awful job. I didn't have the faintest idea what he was talking about most of the time. He didn't really practically show anything happening. He showed some CAD software. He mentioned that someone had ripped him off by making the wood stock smaller than it used to be, and how he had to fudge it and change it, but didn't explain any of that. So, I mean, if anyone who didn't know how to do any of this would watch this video, they still wouldn't know how to do any of this.
No, that I agree with, Intuition. I do. You're absolutely right. But the concept is that you can make it yourself because you want it. Back to you.
Well, of course I believe in that because, you know, back in the good old days before COVID, I used to trudge down to the HamFest and I did a presentation on you could make your own handy talkie stands, charging stations, replacement knobs, and all kinds of weird Klein bottles and such I put on demo. And so I think, again, 3D printing is loads of fun and can be very useful. But, you know, this guy really didn't add anything to the mix as far as I'm concerned.
W2BZ.
Yes, Rich.
Just when you get a chance, Roy, I have another quick question, non-ham radio related.
Okay, I'll put you on the list after David. So I think it is best if we wind this up, Wesley, because I want to give a little time to the other guys.
That's why I wanted to go faster to the subject proposed. Okay, I have not much. Internet and surveillance competing with Mr. Musk, no space junk. So the SULE, that was became famous in 2020, but now in November 18, 2024, they wrote about it again. So there is a solar flying vehicle in that has a 72-foot wingspan and 15 pounds payload capacity. It could stay in air at that was the 55,000 feet, but now it is over 77,000 feet indefinitely. So now what I say is Mr. Musk don't have to send his space junk any longer. What do you think about it, Betty?
Well, I don't know. People are going to do what they're going to do. There's a lot of junk up there, and there's going to be more and more and more because everyone and their brother seems to like this satellite internet and satellite-based cell phone systems. So there's going to be billions of dollars and lots of rockets being used by a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, the last one. The last one has a question below. But first, I'm going to go to it. First, a little network on the moon. So that requires Paul to take a stand to explain us. Cellular telephony on the moon. So it was proposed by Houston Intuitive Machines and Houston's Nokia Expo. But I have a question to you, Dr. Roy, and anybody else. By the way, why is it that Houston Street in Manhattan And Houston, Texas are pronounced differently. Enter it here.
Well, among other things, it's because they're named after different people. Houston is named after Sam Houston, who I think was governor of Texas. And Houston Street was named after a Georgian politician, William Houston. So they pronounced their name differently. They were different people. So that's why.
And that politician, of course, so-called the Manhattan, and one of the streets was named with his name. Paul, would you mind to take a stand and tell us about the cellular network on Moon? Paul and Twixian.
Yeah, I saw the email. WS to lunch. And
yeah,
that's inevitable. You know, cell phones will work on the Moon, they'll work on Mars, they'll work in anywhere in the universe. You know, it's only a matter of time before, you know, once it gets crowded up there, you have people who live in different parts of the Moon, they're all going to be communicating using cell phones, and they'll have satellites. You also have towers, you know, like you have on Earth. You won't have to worry about the winds blowing the towers over, so it won't have to be that strong. That's inevitable. A lot of companies would love to get involved with that. I saw the list. But let me turn it back to you, Roy. WS1.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Paul. So, Wes, are we done for tonight?
Yeah, we're done for tonight. I'm just going to read that. The intuitive machine is in Houston, that would be in Houston. Intuitive machine in Houston, not in Houston. In Houston, that's why I ask how should they properly say. And Nokia in Espoo, Finland, have announced successful integration of Nokia Lunar Surface Communication System, LSCS, into the Athena Lunar Lander, which is scheduled to travel to the Moon's South Pole as part of Intuitive Machines IM-2 mission. The mission will attempt to establish the first cellular network on the Moon. The end of quote, the rest of the article is in the link, so if anybody is interested, maybe Dr. Roy would be able to put this link on his website. Thank you very much, and I appreciate for the chance given to me to talk about all of this subject. And to exchange here.
AC2GS. Thank you, Wesley. Thank you for your participation, as always. I think David left us for the night, but I'll try. David, are you still out there? Yeah, I think he left us something about his neighbors, and he didn't want to keep them up. Rich, you said you had a question to ask.
Yeah, I do. Simple question. What happened to all those drones flying over New Jersey that we heard nightly and don't hear anything about anymore?
Personally, I think it's mostly bupkis. It's kind of the same thing as the Havana syndrome. Someone thinks they saw something, they took some pictures, all of a sudden everyone thinks they saw everything, and eventually someone brings up nuclear weapons, and then all of a sudden no one talks about anything. So I think it was much ado about nothing, if I take this opportunity to pull a Shakespeare phrase out.
Brian, incredibly, it was on the news every night for about 3 weeks straight, and all of a sudden they disappeared or people stopped seeing whatever they were seeing. It's crazy.
I mean, not necessarily crazy. Mass hysteria is not a sign of psychosis. It's something that happens to human beings. They get taken over by circumstances. So, you know, wouldn't be the first time, won't be the last time, but you got to kind of, you know, take it with a grain of salt. When things like this all of a sudden erupt without any real proof of anything going on, and then all of a sudden they just, I mean, who talks about the Havana syndrome anymore? Have you heard about it in the last 6 months other than by me on the TechNet?
Don't even know what it is.
You remember that there were diplomats in Havana who were subjected to death rays, and they were getting headaches and dizziness, and then all of a sudden the same thing sort of happened in China, and then there were reports elsewhere. And the 60 Minutes did a whole thing, and Dick, may rest in peace, watched the 60 Minutes and discussed it on the technical net and kind of legitimized it even more, and it kind of faded away into absolutely nothing.
I do remember that. But this was like nobody could figure it out. And, you know, a lot of them were just, I would think, distant commercial airliners that people were looking at. But, excuse me. But I don't know. It's like it just went away one day. And now there's nothing about them, from people sighting them, you know, 10 of these drones every night, to nothing in one day, in 24 hours. I don't know. Maybe I don't look at the news enough to hear an explanation of what happened to them. But I think, I don't know, I don't think all of it was BS. I think people saw some drones anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, surprise, surprise, you know, in the United States there are drones. I mean, there are a lot of drones in the United States. I remember a guy who threatened if they came anywhere near his property in Staten Island, he was going to take out a shotgun and shoot them down. So, yeah, someone somewhere must have seen a drone. Other times they must have seen a plane. Other times they saw a star in the sky. There's a lot of things up there. There's a lot of room for misinterpretation, confusion, and hysteria. So I think it's primarily the fact that everyone isn't staring at the sky, you know, 12 hours a day, that you're not hearing any reports about things that they don't know what they're looking at. I think that's just the gist of it, as far as I perceive.
Brian?
Yes, Brian?
Isn't it true that all these drone sightings were at night?
I don't know. I probably kind of have to take a complete review. I would be willing to bet you that there must be some random sightings that were reported during the daytime, just the random nature of humanity being what it is.
Most of it was at night.
No pictures.
Yeah, most
of it. Isn't that interesting? Nothing during the day.
Well, no, he didn't say nothing during the day. He said mostly at night, because at night lights are more visible than in the daytime. It's more difficult to visualize lit objects. You know, if an airplane is flashing its lights in the middle of the day, you can't really tell it's flashing its lights. But in the middle of the night, you can tell it's flashing its lights. You may think it's, you know, Zongos from the planet Werbly. But the fact that they use the same color code as the FAA requires might indicate that it's not quite alien.
You know, all it takes is four high school kids who have drones, excuse me again, getting together and saying, let's fly them every night, see what happens. I mean, that's all it would take.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of easy to do that. And there have been kind of people who spend much too much free time screwing around with the world, the guys who did the crop circles. expended a significant amount of effort making those alien crop circles just for giggles and such. So, yeah, it's possible, but a lot of times it doesn't even require people being somewhat malicious. You just give enough people an excuse to be worried about something, and they'll be worried about it.
Yeah, the definition of newsworthy has sure changed in our lifetime, huh?
Look, in the old days, before we were born, there was things called yellow journalism. People kind of forget that. So journalism kind of came in at least two flavors, you know, white and yellow.
And the yellow was what, like fake news?
Well, yeah, I mean, there were a lot of publishers who had a vested interest in sensationalizing things and manipulating politics, manipulating wars, civil unrest, all kinds of things. Go back to your history, the last few hundred years. Newspaper publishers have been the death of tens of thousands of individuals. It's not like it's only been Facebook that kind of caused, I think in Myanmar, they basically assisted in a racial purging. Journalism has a spotty record. They weren't always the idols of perfection that occasionally we put upon them.
Right. Well, thank God we now have Fox News. We could all rest easy that Fox News is on the watch.
Well, like I said before, there have guys who have done the same thing in the olden days and ended up just being footnotes in history. There will be people in the future, whether it will be newspapers or social constructs, who knows. Humanity is full of good people, bad people, and mostly indifferent people.
Comment?
Yes, Brian?
Exactly right. And, you know, whenever you watch the news or have news in any way, shape, or form, if you're getting it just from one source, you're doing yourself a big disservice. You have to spread yourself among several sources and get a consensus. Like, for example, I watch PBS NewsHour. Okay, I don't watch commercial news. Okay. And I find it more straight and factual than other sources. But I always look to other sources to see how they spin things. So it's a game.
Well, you can call it a game. I call it human nature. We're all biased in one degree or another, some consciously, some unconsciously. So, you know, I mean, I guess ultimately the best way, if you had infinite amount of time, is to consume all news and then kind of average it out. And even then, you're not quite sure if it's going to be a perfect average to the 50th percentile or kind of been skewed to the right or the left by some forces. So, you know, again, make sure that your internal BS meter is as well calibrated as you can get it. And keep your mind open and try not to fall for smart Alex out there.
You watch enough news of different sources, and I'll tell you something, it exceeds the limits of my medications.
Well, again, it sort of depends on what subset you listen to. You can't listen to all of them. You'd run out of time. You'd need a time machine to accomplish that, or you'd have to, you know, every so often there were movies where rooms were filled with television sets, and they were all on different channels, and someone was apparently watching them all at the same time somehow. So you can't absorb all that stuff, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
So that's true.
Dr. Laffer, I have a medical question.
With that statement. There is so much news, and news, as I put in quotes, you consider news to be many different things from many, many different sources. And I'll tell you something, it is difficult today to go ahead and find a news outlet that is truly objective. But, you know, such is the world today. Anyway, I'd like to say 73s to everyone. This is KF2ZZ Brian. I'm going to be going QRT. And thank you very much for letting me engage.
You're welcome, Brian, and thanks for your participation. But, you know, all humanity is biased in one way or another. Someone mentioned something about a medical question. I hope it's a short one because we really are running out of time tonight.
I didn't even realize the time. I just wondered what your take was on medical marijuana.
There are some probably good reasons for it. I'm sure people overuse their excuses. There were, at some point or another, psychiatrists who their entire practice was listening to excuses and writing prescriptions before it was approved. You know, I don't see it as the way that everyone turns into a heroin addict. You know, so, you know, as long as you use it responsibly, I don't have any inherent problems with it.
Now, I'll bring it up again. I don't want to keep Paul waiting to take his turn. So, all right, Roy, thanks. W2BZ.
You're welcome. This is AC2GS. It's been fun. Thanks to everyone who participated tonight. I hope you come back next week when we try and do this all over again. But now it's time for the SpaceNet Report with Paul WS2N.
Very good, Roy. AC2GS WS2N. And, yeah, don't smoke any cigarettes, but inhale that marijuana. Make sure you get that deep into your lungs. That's really good for you. Maybe if there was a pill, I guess. I don't know. Rich. Could you imagine? Anyway, I was thinking about the guy that wanted to shoot the drones down. That was John. And he had a W call, and for life me, I can't think of it right.
I thought it was KC2WGB.
Yeah, but I thought it was with the W. It would have been anything. Anyway, yeah. I'll find it in my log one of these days. He was terrific. Now he's a silent key. But yeah, that was one of the funniest things I've ever heard on the air. You know, he came out and somebody was saying, these drones are flying all over. He says, well, if one comes over my house, I'm going to shoot it out of the air.
Yeah, he had great stories. I mean, he once was telling people how he got out of jury duty.
Well, and he developed a seismometer. He was making the seismometer. He was very crafty. Great stories. Anyway, as far as the SpaceNet report goes, tonight, waiting for hopefully a launch that goes up the New Glenn. They call it the NG-1, built by Blue Origin. I've been talking about that probably not only for weeks, probably for months. And it's been under development for, I guess, the last 10 years. Jeff Bezos came up with the idea of building rockets, actually before Elon Musk in 2000. Musk was a couple of years after that. And he had, you know, Bezos had plans of building a rocket that would be completely reusable. And he's been at it, you know, now it's 25 years, and we're about a couple hours away from him launching the first one into orbit. It's a heavy lift vehicle. Much heavier than the Falcon 9. It's got a very big fairing. It's got a 7-meter diameter fairing, which he's going to need because
that Blue Origin wants to do is send a manned vehicle to the moon and also a cargo vehicle that, you know, the same size as the manned vehicle. I mean, these things are like three stories tall and very big in diameter. With a 7 meter diameter, you know, you can go, 21, 23 feet, I think, inside that bearing. And he's competing, up, of course, again with SpaceX. SpaceX has their big vehicle, the Starship. But Starship doesn't have the capability, does not have fairings. So it's got this little, they call it PES dispenser system that's going to release satellites. There's a big difference between the two rockets. The capabilities are much more practical with the New Glenn vehicle. Anyway, it's got 7 engines, BE, 4 engines, LNG, liquid natural gas, which is a form of methane. Runs a little different than methane. He's actually got a little bit more punch out of the LNG than methane does. Liquid oxygen, of course. And the first stage has 7 of these VE4 engines. They've flown before, so even so, this is the first time for this vehicle. The engines themselves have actually flown before, because he's making also for NASA, for the Vulcan rocket. Vulcan rocket is another heavy lift vehicle that's flown already twice before, and very successfully. They run 2 engines on the Vulcan rocket, and so 4 of these engines total have flown before. NASA is very happy with the results from those flights. So we'll see how this thing goes. Once it gets to orbit, it's got a first stage. We'll push the second stage to orbit. Second stage will have 2 BE-3 engines, BE-3U engines, they call it. BE-3 engine is not LNG. I guess it's going to use liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. So, very powerful up the stage. They're looking at 360,000 pounds of thrust, which is more than, probably over one-third more than what Falcon 9 does. Their up the stage is around a little over 200,000 pounds of thrust. So you could easily put spacecraft into, large spacecraft into geosynchronous orbit with this. You could send it off to the moon, to Mars, with larger spacecraft. Much larger than what you could do with the Falcon 9. Falcon 9 has a fairing as well. The amount of volume is twice the amount in the New Glenn rocket. Starship, forget it. I mean, they don't have the bearing, like I said before. So there's no comparison there. You know, the Starship is really a Mars type of rocket. You know, for a crew. Something else will have to be developed for actually sending large amounts of cargo to the Mars or Moon. So SpaceX is, they got a plan, but I believe this New Glenn is going to be more of a game changer. Also 100% reusable. It's designed by Jeff Bezos. The upper stage as well, they called it the Jarvis program. They were trying to develop a reusable upper stage years ago. For now, they've dropped it because they're working on getting this thing to orbit.
But, you know, they could still bring that back. They've got blueprints and all kinds of, you know, deals with government to make sure nobody else steals their information. The BE-3 engines, I wanted to mention that. Those things also, the dead ones on the second stage, have also flown many, many times. The BE-3 is liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. They're flying two of them, but when they fly, cruise into suborbital flights on the new Shepard flight, which they've done, you know, several times, well, they've launched dozens of people so far into a suborbital flight with New Shepard. That engine is the BE-3 engine, so that's proven its worth over and over again. So now they decided to put two of these things on the upper stage. So, and the newer ones are much more powerful when they're used in vacuum. Like I said, over 300,000 pounds of thrust. So hopefully this gets off the ground. I keep looking at my website. It was supposed to go last week at this time. Now 1 week has gone by, and they keep shifting it, you know. And last week they've actually delayed it four different times, and until tonight. And if it doesn't go, I'll be talking about it, I'm sure, next week as well. We'll be talking about it next week, whether it goes or not. Hopefully, successfully. The first stage will land on a drone ship called Jacqueline. He named it after his mother. And it's the biggest ship than what Falcon 9 lands on. He does have a system, some kind of a like robotic thing that will come out after it lands. Again, it lands vertically. And then this robotic gadget is going to come out and attach to it. And it has the capability of taking the rest of the fuel, whatever the fuel is left in there, and out of it, storing it on board. And once that's done, the ship will float back to Florida, have cranes and everything set up there to take that first stage off, and they plan on reusing this one as many as 25 different times. So, of course, that could change in the future, but that's the plan. And they have other ones in development as well. He's got a lot of flights on the manifest, so he's going to be able to hopefully do one after the other. He's got NASA flights. He's got his own Amazon constellation Kuiper system. That's another internet system where they plan on putting over 3,000 satellites into orbit. They've got deals with different foreign companies that want to launch spacecraft, and of course NASA. Let me just stop and see if anybody has any comments or they want to even check in. This is WS2N for the SpaceNet Report. Okay, nothing heard. But it probably doesn't mean much to anybody, but he's going to be able to put 45 tons worth of satellite in one flight if he wants to, into low Earth orbit, and 13 or 14 tons into geosynchronous orbit, and equal amount to the Moon, or Mars for that matter. So I'm really hoping that the New Glenn rocket is successful. It should be a game changer, and he'll wind up giving Elon a run for his money. So, it's already to the point where I used to try to announce every rocket that goes up. SpaceX last year launched 140 rockets alone by themselves. New Glenn is going to get on, you know, going to be a part of the bandwagon as well. They'll be doing, I think he's got 12 or more flights planned for this year, and after that, 25 flights. It's going to be similar to airplanes, you know. If you go to FlightAware and you look at, you know, any airport, it looks like hundreds, if not thousands, of planes flying at any one time. And I could see that in the future with all these rocket launches. Any comment? I don't hear Charlie talking. Charlie usually checks it. Although I think he said he might eventually go down to Florida. If he went early, maybe he'll get to see this flight take off tonight. He would definitely get a kick out of that. Firefly, another rocket company. They're building their own rockets. They've flown to orbit a couple of times already. And one of the other things that they're building is lander that will land on the moon, and they call it Blue Ghost, and that will be launching this week, the 15th, a couple days from now. It'll launch from Launch Complex 39A on a Falcon 9 rocket. It's going to orbit the Earth. Each time it orbits the Earth, every time it gets to the perigee, it will ignite its engines again. Each time they do that, it'll get further and further into an elliptical orbit around Earth until eventually the moon will pick up the gravitational pull of that spacecraft and spend another couple of days eventually getting into lunar orbit. Anyway, after launch, it's going to take about 45 days before this thing gets into into the lunar orbit and eventually land on the moon. It's a lander. And it's got at least 10 different experiments on board, a couple of them by NASA. One of them I like. They plan on testing like a vacuum cleaner. So they're going to have a pressurized nitrogen charge in this gadget that's going to, you know, be in that surface. It's going to be able to blow the surface and then suck up the dust and little pebbles. They said up to a centimeter thick, but you'll be able to suck stuff up and go inside, and then from there it'll have the capability of having detectors and figure out what the stuff is made of in the future. So anyway, this is going to be the first test of this back on the moon. This thing is again successful. It will be landing, and then if you look at the moon, the northeast quadrant of the moon, it's not going to the poles like so many other flights are planned for. So it's a little different. So it's going to go in somewhat of a equatorial orbit, not a polar orbit, before it lands. But, you know, it's not a small vehicle. I mean, this thing is 6.5 feet tall, and it's wider than the room I'm sitting in. My room is 10 feet wide, and this thing is around 11.5 feet wide. It's got four legs on it, and good throttleable engine where you can slow itself down, hopefully at the right speed, and within maybe a month or two, see, I guess within 2 months we'll be talking about the blue ghost sitting on the moon. And it's the first of many. They have other ones that they plan on flying as well in the future. This is Firefly. So far they've successfully launched rockets out of California. And they plan on eventually launching out of Florida as well. And a little different than the other companies. I mean, Firefly is flying vehicles that are expendable. They are not reusable. And one of the engines that they're building for these vehicles is being developed for the new Antares rocket that hasn't flown yet. Antares has flown with older engines. So that's another medium lift vehicle. That's the one that launches the Cygnus cargo vehicle to the International Space Station. Right now, the Cygnus is still going up, but they had a few flights with the Atlas V rocket and a couple of flights with SpaceX. But eventually, they want to get back to launching their own vehicle, and they do that with the Antares rocket. And they are developing new engines, and they have Firefly contracted to build these engines. They call them the Miranda engine. So there'll be two of them attached to the bottom of an Antares rocket in the future. We'll see. Let me just stand by and see if anybody has any comments. WS2M. Another thing that NASA is heavily involved with is trying to eventually get these samples back from Mars. Perseverance, the rover, landed on 2021 in February. It's been up there ever since, riding on a nuclear-powered power supply, an RG, a radioisotope thermoelectric generator. Doing quite well. Hasn't really gotten stuck like some of the earlier solar-powered ones. The wheels are really holding up. You might remember Curiosity is roughly about the same size as Perseverance. The wheels are quite damaged. Of course, they improved on that. On the Perseverance rover that went up some years after, quite a few years after Curiosity was landed in 2012. And these are both on Earth. These are 2,000-pound vehicles. And they look like big. If you look down, it looks like they're 10 by 10. 10 feet by 10 feet. And they have 50 kilograms on each one. And this mission, Perseverance, one of the things they did was drive around Mars, and they drilled a bunch of holes here and there, and they filled up these test tubes. They look like fancy test tubes. And after they filled them up, there would be little core samples. They left them on the planet, different locations. They know exactly where they are. And there's plan for, of course, returning these things. That was in development years ago, and the cost has really become really too much, over $10 billion. And they're looking to cut costs on doing that. So temporarily, that part is, whatever their plans were scrapped. And now they want to come up with two more different plans. And they're looking at one similar to how they landed Curiosity and
Perseverance with this sky crane system. You know, the vehicle gets launched from Florida. Takes roughly 6 to 8 months to get to Mars. And then it separates from the cruise stage. So the vehicle starts coming through the atmosphere. It doesn't orbit Mars. It just comes pretty direct shot to the planet. And it starts heating up. It has a heat shield. Heat shield eventually will eventually drop off. Once it slows down enough, you have parachutes that come out. And then as you get closer to the surface, the heat shield separates. And then below that, you have this lander. And the lander is connected by these strong cables. And sky crane has these thrusters on them. There were 8 thrusters that would fire, and it would slow down until it started to hover right above the surface. And it would, the cables would lower the vehicle, and right as it gets near the surface, touches down. They have cable cutters. They're like little guillotines that have explosive bolts, charges connected to it. And the guillotines cut the cables, and the sky crane flies away and leaves the vehicle on the surface. They're doing something similar to that in the future. Now you have a lander, a rover on a vehicle smaller than smaller than a Perseverance, and the vehicle would then drive open to all the different locations where the all these little test tubes are laying. I think there's almost 23 of them that they would have to pick up now. And they would, eventually bring it over to another vehicle that they say would also land. And then this one would have a solid fuel rocket that would take these things back to orbit. And then they would orbit with a European Space Agency orbital vehicle around Mars. They would have to dock with that. The vehicle would have to eventually deorbit Mars and then come all the way back to Earth. Well, that's one plan that they plan on doing. The other plan is they're going to rely on either SpaceX or maybe even Blue Origin to have an actual big vehicle land vertically, and then from there some kind of a rope have to do the same thing after loading these pieces back up into this large vehicle, like a starship. Would ignite and come back to our Earth. All of these are, from what I see, many years away. I saw one prediction, maybe 2031, 2032, before we would ever get the samples back. And I think that's being optimistic. Any comments? WSQI. Okay, I really don't have any other topics right now. We're in a lull as far as new projects coming out. I think because of the new administration, this happens roughly 4 years, I noticed. Anytime there's a big change in the administration, there's uncertainty in the future of a lot of different projects. A lot of different missions. Our new mission is going to be started up. Our old one's going to be canceled. We'll know in a couple of weeks. They do have a new administrator coming into NASA, Jared Isaacman. He is in his young 40s. He's already flown 2 times to space, not for NASA. He flew for a private company, SpaceX. Jared Isaacman is himself a billionaire on his own right.
So, you know, you're going to have another billionaire running NASA, if approved. You know, these people have to get approved by the Senate. And I think he has an okay chance of probably making it. Bill Nelson will be retiring. I think he's 80-something. And, you know, he'll be gone. And he's the one trying to finalize this plan for Mars sample return. He would like to get that done before he leaves. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, though. Again, a lot of uncertainty. I don't know which missions are going to be funded and which ones are not. I've even heard rumors of the SLS system being canceled, which would be a disaster if they do that. I just can't see it happening. There's way too many different states that have employees working on that project, the SLS program, Space Launch System, as well as the Orion spacecraft. So I don't see that happening. I see these, stories like they've talked, you guys were talking about before. Who knows what's true and what's not, you know. Personally, I just don't see them canceling SLS. That's right now their one-way trip to the moon with that vehicle. SpaceX is nowhere near ready. He does not even have a Starship in orbit yet. NASA has already launched SLS to the moon and back. The Orion spacecraft, it was unmanned. There were people in there. They would have made it. But you know, that was the first test of that vehicle, and they did that in 2022, the end of 2022, a long time ago. So we'll see. Any comments? This is WS2N. Okay, nothing heard. I really don't have anything else further. So I'm going to turn it back to Roy. A little on the early side. Usually we have it about another 6 or 7 minutes. Tomorrow night we have the Limar Club InfoNet, and that comes on at 8:30, not 8 o'clock like this net does. 8:30, and that will be followed with this Flopper Shop, and that's always followed by Newsline. But for now, let me turn it over to you, Roy, AC2GS WS2N, for the Space Net Report. Back to you, Roy.
AC2GS, thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all you do for the technical net and all you do for the club. We all appreciate it. I especially appreciate it. I appreciate everyone's participation. Charlie, I think, said he was going to be away this week. Frank was on Echo Link earlier, but I think he had to drop off. So that might be why not much third-party participation. But we thank everyone for participating. As always, before we leave, just want to remind people, Dick K2IW had a great line at the end of his nets. He advised everyone to be kind to each other. That's always good advice. And I always like to bring up good old Epictetus. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So try to keep your mind open, but not so wide open that your brain falls out. Anyway, our revels now are done here. Everyone have a great week. Stay warm, be well, stay safe, and come back next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over. This is AC2GS, and I will be clear after I say, Slava Ukraini.
Okay, 73, Roy. By the way, a while back you recommended the book Project Hail Mary. It was excellent by Andy Weir. And it turns out they just finished filming a movie of the same name. But it's probably a year a little, well, they said a year from now, by the time it would be released, just to let you know. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it. It was a good read. He's a good writer. You know, there are some guys that just have one decent book, and that's it. But he just keeps on writing decent books, and they do very well with movies. It's going to probably take a long while because the CGI is going to be is going to be a lot of work for that one. So I look forward to watching that movie.
Yeah, so do I. I do one the other one was called Artemis, not the Artemis launch program that we have. But Artemis was the name of the base on the moon, and that was featured in that whole book. But they didn't do that one. They skipped that one and went directly to Project Hail Mary.
Well, I Hail Mary is a kind of a, you know, a much, much bigger story than Artemis was. So maybe that's what kind of caused that problem.
Yeah, it's such a big story. I didn't think that they could handle it, but they did. Well, we'll see. Look forward to that. Probably within a year, I guess. Anyway, 73, Roy. Good night, and we'll catch you next week. WS to us.
73, Paul. Likewise.
Nat time complete. W2VL repeater.